I'd like to call the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee to order. Amara, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard.
Here.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcil.
Here.
Representatives Barrero.
Here.
Duggan.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
DiLombardo.
Here.
Henson.
Here.
Hinchowski.
Here.
Hillebrew.
Here.
Pastor.
Here.
Oberdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Amara. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. I want to remind you of the House COVID-19 protocols which require us to keep keep your mask on. House policies require all individuals making presentations to committees to keep their mask on through presentations, and to remind you to silence your cell phone and other communication devices. Members, today we're going to move right into our member bills and our consent agenda, and then we have some presentations. We have some guests with us today. First up, we will have, is Representative Fetterhoff here? I don't see her yet. So Representative Robinson, you're recognized to explain House Bill 797.
Testing, there we go. House Bill 797 updates Part 3 of Chapter 631, which establishes Florida's Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association, by adding conforming language contained in the model National Association of Insurance Commissioners, Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Model Act. We're attempting to do this in all 50 states. FALHIGA, which is the acronym, is the safety net that pays policyholder claims of insolvent life, annuity, health, and long-term care insurance companies should they be rendered insolvent. And the bill accomplishes a few things, and I'll lay a few of them out for you. The changes include clarifying that FALHIGA may also assume or reissue policies of insolvent carriers. It removes unnecessary and dated caps, and it also removes a reduced assessment level levied on nonprofit annuity insurers, placing them on par with other insurers. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that explanation. Do we have any amendments? Seeing none, do we have any questions? And this is kind of a technical area, but our primary objective is to consider the fiscal impact to the department that would have from these changes. Is there public testimony? I see we have, let's see, Timothy Meenan. Mr. Meenan? Timothy Meenan waves in support. I see no others. Members, is there any debate on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Robinson, you are recognized to close on the bill, and you might mention if there's any fiscal impact.
Chair, I'm glad you mentioned that. Per your staff report, there is no fiscal on state government, and that's laid out in your staff report. And with that, I close and ask for your favorable support.
Thank you. Amara, will you please call the roll on House Bill 797?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Goff-Marcil?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fisher? DiLombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Hinchowski?
Yes.
Hillebrew?
Yes.
Pastor?
Yes.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, will show House Bill 797 reported favorably.
Thank you all. Have a good day.
Representative Fetterhoff, welcome. You are recognized to explain House Bill 733, Credit for Reinsurance.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair, for allowing me to present this bill today. Credit for Reinsurance is a amends the Florida statutes to comply with the changes required by the covered agreements as entered into by the Federal Insurance Office. The covered agreements prohibit the EU and the UK from imposing collateral restrictions on U.S. reinsurers and requires the U.S. to reciprocate. Florida has 60 months from the date of signing, which was September 22nd, 2017, to remove these collateral restrictions or face preemption by the FIO. And basically, we need to get this done this year so that we are in compliance. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any amendments to the bill? No amendments. Are there questions? Any questions of the bill sponsor? Public testimony. Mr. Meenan?
They're waiving on all the bills today, Madam Chair.
Okay, waive in support. Gregory Black? I see Gregory Black was intent is to waive in support. George Vallejo from the Florida Insurance Council waives in support. Allison Seitz, Office of Insurance Regulation, waives in support. That concludes the public testimony. Members, is there a debate on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Fetterhoff, you're recognized to close on House Bill 733.
I will waive close on this great bill.
Thank you. Amara, will you please call the roll on the bill?
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Gothmer-Sill?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fisher? DiLombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Panchowski?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Pastor?
Yes.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, by your vote, we will show House Bill 733 reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Fetterhoff. Congratulations. Next, we will take up the consent agenda. This is the consent agenda for appropriation project bills. I would like to remind everybody that by reporting a project favorably, it does not fund the bill, but makes it eligible for funding. We will take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. The public is welcome to testify on any of the bills listed on the consent agenda. We will not take up questions, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we will be in question and debate only once. Remember, you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with the administrative assistant before the vote. With that said, are there any questions? Seeing none, public testimony. I have one, Eric Prutzman from the Florida Fire Chiefs Association. I show him waiving in support of House Bill 2779, Fire Cancer Initiative. That is my one. Amara, do we have any no vote forms?
No.
Seeing none, Amara, will you please call the roll on the consent agenda? Remember, a yes vote signifies an affirmative vote for every bill on the consent agenda, with the exception of any no votes on any particular bill, which we do not have. So it will be a yes vote on the entire consent agenda. Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Chair Stevenson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Yes.
Ranking Member Gothmer-Sill?
Yes.
Representatives Barrero?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fisher? DiLombardo?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Panchowski?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Pastor?
Yes.
Oberdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your vote, all the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. Now we are going to move into a presentation by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. They have two presentations. The first is an overview of the Division of Hotel and Restaurants and the improvements the department has begun making in the area of public health inspections. And the second is an update by the department on the responsibility to combat human trafficking based on legislation we passed in 2019. And members, I'm delighted to say we have with us today our newly appointed DBPR Secretary, Julie Brown. Secretary, we are pleased to have you join with us today. You're welcome to present.
Thank you so much, Chairman Stevenson and committee members, and really appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today and want to help apprise you of the efforts and the work of the Division of Hotels and Restaurants at DBPR. As Chair stated, I'm newly appointed just 3 weeks, and I can already attest that I'm very impressed about the agility and resiliency of our team in carrying out our agency's responsibilities and newly created regulatory responsibilities. To that effect, I really want to thank you and this committee and your members for providing us with the resources to bolster our work. With me today is our Division Director, Stephen von Bodingen, who will provide you with the requested update. Thank you again, Chair.
Thank you. Mr. von Bodingen, you're recognized to present. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Testing? Okay. Well, good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. My name is Stephen von Bodingen, and I'm the director of DBPR's Division of Hotels and Restaurants. It's a pleasure to be with you today to present our update on public health inspections and the implementation of House Bill 851 to combat human trafficking. For presentation purposes, I'll provide the update on public health inspections first and then present on the division's implementation of House Bill 851 and public lodging establishments. The division licenses and inspects a wide array of public lodging and food service as well as vertical transportation. While traditional restaurants are the largest category of our food licenses, we also have a number of other types that we license and inspect. The Florida legislature authorizes the Department of Business and Professional Regulation to regulate all the areas and functions shown here. The division headquarters is in Tallahassee, while the majority of our employees are in the field throughout Florida. The Bureau of Sanitation and Safety Inspections has 7 district offices that are located in Miami, Margate, Fort Myers, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville, and Panama City Beach. Each of the 7 district offices is responsible for coordinating daily activities and scheduling inspections. Administrative enforcement cases are initiated by our district offices to ensure compliance with the law. Another program strength is our Office of Program Quality, which monitors the quality of activity for our food and lodging inspectors and ensures consistency by delivering at least 20 hours of continuing education annually to all food and lodging inspectors, as well as standardized testing to keep consistent with the FDA food code. As you see in the top left-hand corner, the division continues to celebrate over 108 years in Florida's hospitality industry. The 1913 Florida legislature created the Hotel Commission to enforce basic sanitation and safety in hotels, inns, restaurants, and public lodging houses through annual inspections. Today, the division licenses more than 110,000 public food service and lodging establishments. The division continues to be self-funded with license fees, fully paying for all the services provided. Inspectors are still based out of the district offices. There are now 7 district offices with 233 inspectors. The licensure section of the division processes licenses for public lodging and food service establishment and issues elevator certificates of operation. Staff enters new licenses and changes of ownership, reconciles license fees, resolves licensing problems, and provides license information to the public and the division's field staff. They coordinate the division's annual license renewals for over 110,000 public food and lodging establishments. The division continues to conduct and record over 150,000 inspections annually with mobile technology. Electronic inspections continue to provide a number of benefits, including greatly increased report legibility, improved licensee education, and standardized violation documentation. The account growth the division has been experiencing is great news for Florida's hospitality industry and Florida's economy. Due to this account growth and inspector turnover, the division had been unable to reach long-range performance measures until fiscal year 2019-2020. This challenge was addressed in two parts. The first, with the addition of 20 senior inspector full-time employees, FTEs, in fiscal year 2019-2020. As you can see in the chart, senior inspector positions are a level up from regular inspectors. New hires usually first start as inspectors and over time become skilled and seasoned enough for this promotion and an opening around the state. In fiscal year 2020-21, the division received an additional 21 senior inspectors for growth and 3 senior inspectors to address human trafficking education compliance, which will be discussed in the next presentation. Finally, 2 vacant inspector positions were converted to field supervisors to balance out the fundamental need of quality assurance and oversight for our newly added inspection staff. The second part of addressing our challenge was a salary of our field inspection staff. As a result of the 2019 legislative session, the Department of Business and Professional Regulations Division of Hotels and Restaurants requested and was given $491,096 of recurring salaries and benefits budget authority to implement a plan to increase inspector retention and the statutory completion of required inspections. Why? The Division of Hotels and Restaurants was experiencing an unacceptably high annual vacancy rate, a 27% 3-year average. Despite operational improvements that increased efficiencies, the division was experiencing a reduction in inspection productivity and diminishing public health outcomes due to the high turnover rate. A high turnover rate negatively impacts the division's ability to provide the industry with a quality inspection program. Ongoing inspector turnover rates have an adverse effect on the division's ability to protect the public health of Florida citizens and guests. DBPR's plan addressed the number one reason, higher pay, inspectors cite for leaving division employment based on exit interviews. These professional positions, inspector, senior inspector, and field supervisor, are the foundation of the division's food safety and lodging inspection program. A high vacancy rate compromises public health, core mission, and the ability to meet legislatively mandated performance measures. In order to complete the statutorily required food and lodging inspections, the division needs to retain existing staff and reinvest part of the annual training expense incurred for training. Newly hired inspector training is highly science-based, including courses on microbiology, epidemiology, and the FDA food code. Whereas continuing education previously focused on basic knowledge of laws and rules, now continuing education must include the risk-based education essential to retaining the FDA standardization. Salary funds were distributed to the inspector and senior inspector positions, creating an attractive and competitive base salary for the division's inspector positions, especially when compared to similar inspector positions with other Florida government agencies. The division's new hire rate has improved, as seen in the graph on this presentation. It is important to emphasize that the division does still experience turnover. Within the month of March and April, the division anticipates hiring an additional 10 inspectors due to turnover. The increased salary expenditures provides multiple returns on investments to the division's inspection program, the state of Florida, licensed public lodging and food service establishments, and the public's health and safety. The division expects both short-term and long-term returns with three primary categories: reduced vacancy rate, increased productivity, and cost reinvestment. Today, we are just past a one-year mark, and the division is experiencing increased employee retention, and the number of vacant positions have decreased, resulting in an overall increase in inspection productivity. In addition to the change in salary structure, has increased the qualified applicant pool, allowing the division to fill vacancies quicker. The division is also more competitive, is also in a more competitive position with other governmental agencies for recruitment and employee retention. In the very last column, you will see our inspection completion percentage as of February. Comparatively speaking, the division was at 58% in food service and 50% in lodging the same time last year. I'm highlighting this positive trend in the division's inspection activity as we met and exceeded our performance expectations in fiscal year 19-20 and anticipate meeting or exceeding our performance measures for fiscal year 20 and 21. So much of this is attributed to the salary improvements in the positions given to us by this subcommittee. We thank you very much. And that concludes our presentation for the Division of Hotels and Restaurants on Public Health Inspections Update.
Thank you very much, Mr. Do I say Vaughn in front of your last
name? That is just fine. Vaughn Bodigan. Yes, ma'am.
Vaughn Bodigan. And I don't think I mentioned in the beginning he's the Director of Divisions of Hotels and Restaurants. Members, are there any questions about the presentation? Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you for the presentation, and I'm surprised I have questions, but I do.
Sure.
So you mentioned an electronic inspection.
Yes, ma'am.
Exactly what does that mean? Is it on site?
You're recognized.
Yes, inspections are all done on site. They're unannounced, largely, mostly, and that's by design. So as places are inspected based on risk, especially when you're talking about things like food service establishments.
Mm-hmm.
They're unannounced. They're iPads are what our inspectors are issued with airtime and other, other pieces of the inspection piece. But they're conducted on site by our inspector. A copy is provided to the operator upon completion, and oftentimes it's emailed to them at the exact same time of completion as well.
Your follow-up.
Yes, thank you. Has your inspection regimen changed during the pandemic, and how?
Well, we certainly saw a lot of different things during the pandemic, and I think we all did. A lot of it was us following the CDC guidance and the different interpretations that followed along the way, but we still conducted inspections in person with the operators of restaurants, in part as they are out operating as well and providing food to the public. So some things became more focused and concentrated while you look at particular sections and people become used to dealing with COVID and things progress as they go on throughout the year.
So the
So
CDC guidelines became a part of your regimen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. May I be recognized for two questions?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, madam. The first question has to do with vacation rentals. I noticed that you do a yearly inspection for all the other hotels, restaurants, and all those that you inspect, while vacation rentals, you list that you only inspect them upon complaint. Knowing the issues that we have with vacation rentals, why? Can you walk me through why is it only done upon receiving a complaint?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. For one primary reason, that is the way the law reads, is that vacation rentals are exempt from routine inspection activity that restaurants and other types of public lodging establishments do have. So in recognizing that change and that difference, the division primarily staffs and focuses around our statutorily required needs and our completion of the things that we must do. So as even in times like this where our staffing is increased and our pay for inspectors have increased as well, should we're able to reach efficiencies towards the end of the year, unannounced inspections on probably some vacation rentals would definitely be part of our plan. But as a normal course of action, we will focus on inspections that are statutorily mandated throughout the fiscal year prior to doing other activities.
And you had a second question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And the second question has to do with actually the ones on the board that you list where you show that you exceeded the performance measure in June 2020 and your year 2021. Was that only due to the salary improvement that you mentioned, or were there some other factors that facilitate this performance, you exceeding the performance measure? Because if it was just money, then you see what I'm saying? I'm trying to figure out whether anything else, any other factors that have contributed to that.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I would say primarily it's due to the resources that the subcommittee has given us. So, over a course of two fiscal years, in part, some of those positions are associated with human trafficking, but the subcommittee provided us with an additional 45 positions, and so that would be 44 senior inspectors. Combine that with the salary increase that we were able to implement, it improves the system. It makes it more attractive. It makes it more competitive. It makes people want to stay longer. And we want to invest in them and keep them around as long as we possibly can.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I commend you on that improvement, exceeding your performance measure. Congratulations on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Woodson. Representative Overdorf?
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions. I noticed that for various counties, you have basically a central hub for that district. I believe it was District 2, it's Fort Lauderdale, and for District 4, Orlando. Are there DVPR offices in every county as well for servicing various requests and things along those lines?
You're recognized.
Our inspectors are actually home-based. So while they report out of a district office and we have management structure and supervision in place that is housed out of our district offices in each one of those metropolitan areas, our inspectors are fundamentally based from home. And that's one of the efficiencies that a division strives to make every day. As you can imagine, someplace like Port St. Lucie is quite a ways away from downtown Orlando, but the position in and of itself would still report up through that chain of command. So by basing our inspectors in the field, we're able to send them almost real time or on short notice to conduct the inspections in their area that's right there, usually within the area that they live or close by, in order to facilitate that need of an officer and an individual in every county. So that's typically how we address that.
The other side of that, though, is there a physical location within the county that a restaurateur, a person who is applying for a liquor license or something along those lines, if they can physically go to that office, do you have one of those locations in every county?
No, we do not have a physical office for the public in every county.
Thank you.
Well, that makes me, I want to ask a question. Can people do it online? Can they apply for a license online? How is that handled?
Certainly, Chair. And that is where our biggest of our benefit goes and so much of our work is that we're continually improving our online services. Internally, we know it as Versa Online, but it's our licensing database and the department's capability of bringing licensees online electronically. Without having to appear in person or to report to a particular office. Most all of our licensure can be conducted electronically via the internet and via our business portal.
Very good. I was curious about the frequency of the inspections. It's once a year for lodging? And restaurants is in general, I mean, excluding vacation rentals, is it once a year?
Certainly. Well, on the food service side, it's strictly risk-based. So, and that's between one of four different categories. We have like a level one, two, three, and a four. Level one would be your simplest of food service. I often describe it something similar to like basically a sandwich shop, where perhaps they're not really cooking anything as much as what they're doing is putting things like sandwiches or ingredients together. We call that a level one risk. It's a low risk because it's associated with their extent of how much food that they are handling, cooking, or reheating. Level two is our next level up and probably our biggest sector of public food service licenses, and we call it a risk level two, and that's where it's a little bit more involved. So the first level, you're inspected once a year. Second level, you're inspected twice a year. So these restaurants are the more typical restaurants that I think you might see around town that actually take raw product and cook it, where they take raw ingredients, mix them together, cook it and combine it, and some of the products might be subject to reheating, thawing, or cooling. So we tend to try to look at all of those establishments at least one extra time a year. Sometimes we will visit a place more based on complaints or what's going on in the field. Our next two categories up on the risk level for the four for the restaurants, three is for operators that are having compliance problems with the division, so we inspect them a third time to try to help bring them back into compliance with the rules and regs. And the fourth one is associated with four inspections a year for a confirmed foodborne illness outbreak. So we consider that to be the most severe of type of violations, and thereby, at a minimum, we should be looking at your establishment up to four times in a year. On the lodging side, it's a little bit different. You know, risk in public lodging establishments doesn't necessarily equate apple to apple like in food service establishments. So we have a set principle for transient lodging establishment, vacation rentals aside, be inspected twice a year. And then non-transient apartments, and those are the type of lodging facilities where you see people live. They take out a lease, and it is their home. We inspect those once a year.
Thank you. We take a lot of those things for granted, and thank you for looking after the food safety. It's very interesting, and maybe somebody listening will choose a career in food inspection. It's good to hear that the increased funding and staffing has brought improved compliance and safety to the people of Florida and our visitors. Did you have another question? Yeah. If I think we have time, we're good. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned a hiring and retention problem. My curiosity now is, what are the qualifications for an inspector?
What are the qualifications for an inspector? We look for 2 years of industry-related experience. Preferably the more experience, oftentimes the better. It's a lot of times how the applicant pools work. So 2 years of industry experience, in certain situations, they can substitute like a degree in culinary education or hospitality administration to substitute for some of the required experience for some of the younger people to the industry. But as a matter of speaking, we get a great deal of people from the industry join the division based on their industry knowledge and their knowledge of restaurants, hotels and motels and of the industry. And so that is a lot of how the division is able to recoup its knowledge and build its base is associated with all the professional people that are in the hospitality field in the state.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for the presentation. I really have learned a lot.
Thank you. And I hope we haven't worn you out. Do you need a sip of water or anything? Are you okay to continue?
I'm fine, Chair.
Okay. I'm also very interested in your next presentation, implementation of House Bill 851 on human trafficking.
Very good. So for presentation purposes, I've provided the update on public health inspections first, and I'm now presenting on the division's implementation of House Committee Substitute House Bill 851 in public lodging establishments. This legislation was enacted during the 2019 legislative session and established human trafficking awareness requirements for public lodging establishments regulated by DBPRs, Division of Hotels and Restaurants. The enforcement of statutory requirements began January the 1st of 2021. The law has three main requirements set forth in 509-096. The first, public lodging establishments must provide training regarding human trafficking awareness to employees of the establishment who perform housekeeping duties in the rental units or who work at the front desk or the reception area where guests ordinarily check in or check out. Employees must be trained by January the 1st, 2021, or within 60 days of hire, whichever occurs later. Proof of training for each applicable employee must be provided to the Division of Hotels and Restaurants upon request. The second requirement, also to be implemented by January the 1st of 2021, is for the public lodging establishments to implement a procedure for the reporting of suspected human trafficking to the National Human Trafficking Hotline, or to a local law enforcement agency. The third of the three main requirements, also to be enforced by January the 1st, 2021, is for public lodging establishments to post a human trafficking public awareness sign and a conspicuous location in the establishment which is accessible to employees. This sign, which is stated in statute, must be at least 11 by 15 inches, at least a 32-point type, must be in English and Spanish, and by any other language predominantly spoken in the area. The sign states, if you or someone you know is being forced to engage in an activity and cannot leave, whether it is prostitution, housework, farm work, factory work, retail work, restaurant work, or any activity, call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 888-373-7888. Or text info or help to 233-733 to access help and services. Victims of slavery and human trafficking are protected under the United States and Florida law. The division verifies compliance with each one of these three requirements during our public lodging establishment inspections. The Florida legislature appropriated us four new staff positions to assist with the workload associated with implementing and enforcing this statutory requirement. We received one training and research consultant position that was appropriated. This person reviews training curriculum submitted by public lodging establishments and other interested parties, issues curriculum approvals based on compatibility with statutory requirements. We also received three senior inspector positions that were appropriated as well. This augments our total number of inspectors employed by the division, provides more manpower to offset the workload increase associated with new inspection duties and enforcement of statutory requirements. Additionally, we have staff training. In-house training and refresher training has been approved to all division field staff, has been provided to all division field staff. Training includes a comprehensive review of the statutory requirements, agency responsibilities, and guidelines for compliance and enforcement. In regards to the technology implementations, the Division of Hotels and Restaurants coordinated with DVPR's Division of Technology to update its software used by the division to produce the inspection reports, much like we were talking about a brief while ago. For regulatory and oversight, as it's associated with the new law, enforcement began on January the 1st, 2021. Establishments are given 60 days correct when a violation is noted. Establishments must comply within the 60-day time frame, or an additional 30 days may be granted if the establishment provides written assurances that the violations have been corrected within a total of 90 days. The administrative actions have yet been issued. No administrative actions have yet been issued as the statutory requirements took effect less than 90 days ago. And this concludes our presentations for the Division of Hotels and Restaurants Committee Substitute, House Bill 851. I'm happy to answer any questions at this time. But I would like to at least say thank you so very much for your continued support of the division and its mission to protect the health and safety of the public by providing the industry with quality inspections and fair regulation.
Thank you for your presentation. Representative Toledo, would you have some, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you. I think this will go a long way in combating human trafficking. And I know you said it's fairly new, but have there been any reports on, after the training, on human trafficking activity?
I'm not aware that we've you know, received any particular individual reports, you know, in regards to, I'll say, an active situation. But we are still very much so in the progress and in the mode of educating our operators right now and helping explain the requirements to them as they're becoming effective in order for them to be in compliance with the law. So while we realize, you know, non-compliance will certainly is a possibility and is an outcome, you know, our primary goal, especially up front, is to make sure these operators, all the operators, understand why we're doing it, what we're doing it for, and truly that it's not that difficult to comply with the law if you just do the training as it's appropriated.
Follow up,
yes. So the training is one thing, but what about duty to report? If someone sees something, do they have to say something? Or is it by each establishment?
You're recognized.
I believe it's a duty of law as it's written for people to report. But certainly our education of the operators is intended for them to help understand and encourage their staff for a full understanding that you know, not only should you think about calling or reporting, you should report. You know, you have to report. It's all of our duties to report it to combat human trafficking. So we continue to push that message each and every day to our establishments.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we've all seen, Representative Oberdorf.
I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for rolling with that, getting it going, complying, obviously, not that you had a choice, but thank you for complying with it sincerely and for the program you are putting forward. I know that Representative Toledo serves in the Human Trafficking Council now and is helping with shaping some of that dialogue. I serve in the direct service organization that funds that council as well. So I know that we've both seen this firsthand, I just want to say thank you again for making sure that your staff is trained, associated with that. I know we're 21 days out from the compliance side. Have you heard back from any hoteliers as far as the training itself? What's the reception been for the employees? That kind of thing, if you could expound upon that a little bit.
Thank you, Chair. You know, our feedback from the operators has been very positive. And I think it's really a matter of the operators understanding the types of programs, implementing it, and making sure they have the proper procedures in place. So the feedback from the industry and from their hospitality operators has been very strong. Everybody's been more than willing to implement, you know, the new rules and regulations, and we continue to see it as a positive move.
Go ahead.
I know that law enforcement also has seen, kind of been reaping the rewards, if you will, of this of the enforcement against this just god-awful trade. Sure. And so it'll be interesting to see as we move forward. Number one, I think in your larger chains and things like that, you're going to get a different clientele on this versus the other areas where you're going to be inspecting that are gonna see a different type of trafficking. And so I think it's gonna be an important distinction then to look at not only what is the sex trafficking side of it, but also on the labor trafficking side. And I think that Florida is more prone than people wanna think for the labor trafficking side. So again, it's an area that obviously we're very concerned with. I'm grateful for DVPR and for your efforts, and look forward to having another report from you the next time we come up for session and some other data points there. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Henson.
To that end, Is law enforcement involved in your training at all?
You're recognized.
We do not have a law enforcement officer that necessarily trains us or speaks to us, but we're certainly training all of our inspectors on all the statutory requirements in addition to reviewing all the human trafficking education programs that are submitted to the division for review and approval prior to implementation in the field. So we've had a great deal of success and interest in that with many different organizations wanting to put forth their programs in order to help train people in the industry. So what we really are relying and on is that through the different programs and through the different constituencies they represent, they'll be able to help touch some of their own base in certain ways if they're having a problem connecting.
Thank you. It seems to me that you wouldn't necessarily receive the reports. The reports go straight to law enforcement.
I would have to think that is probably the case.
And,
yes.
And I'm not sure every business would want to be on the front page that they had, you know, it's not necessarily something they would be excited to say happened in their place. I'm not sure how businesses would feel about it, but the important thing is that people get help and they know that they can call a number, memorize the number till they have access to a phone. I'm very encouraged. It's a good common sense thing and just makes people more alert that they have a role and they can help.
Yes, Chair. Yeah, we're pushing it along every day, making sure that we can do everything that we can.
And I commend Representative Toledo and Representative Overdorf for their involvement. It's a very important and difficult area, and it's a fact in Florida. I think sometimes just because we have so many people in our communities, we're so mobile, and we have visitors coming and going, it's easy to blend in sometimes. And so I think that we... having eyes on and the training is very strong. So I wish you continued success in that important mission.
Thank you, Chair.
I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you again.
And thank you, Secretary. We're very grateful and wish you continued success. It's a great organization and does very important work. Look forward to working with you. Thank you. Members, this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? I don't see any. Seeing none. I just want to let you know we're kind of getting to the end of your member projects. If your member projects haven't been heard in another committee, we're kind of at the end of that. So be sure and talk to your chairs. We've been working diligently to get the projects that we have with the up for consideration, and. Seeing no further comments, Representative Robinson moves we rise.